Welcome to the MS Fitness Challenge Podcast, your source of inspiring information concerning multiple sclerosis, fitness, and health. The MS Fitness Challenge provides guidance and support to people living with MS and fitness professionals worldwide on the benefits of exercise, nutrition, and mindset. I'm Maureen Manley, your host, exercise scientist, and director of integrated wellness here at the MS Fitness Challenge. Today, our special guest is the inspiring Gary Pinder. During the cold winter months, when most people head indoors to escape the sometimes below freezing temperatures, Gary heads outdoors into the frigid temperatures to seize his peak season of training. Gary has had MS for 26 years. He exercises regularly, including playing indoor soccer weekly. With his understanding of his heat sensitivity, Gary utilizes the cold winter months, and I mean cold, to build up his strength and endurance by running long distances. Gary has written for many MS publications about his journey and shares his strategies to remain empowered and active while living with MS. Born in England, Gary moved to the States for college and graduate school, where he met his wife along the way. They now have two grown children and currently reside in Annapolis, Maryland. Gary, welcome to the show. It's fantastic to have you with us.
Hi, Maureen.
Great to have you here. Thank you so much for being here. You know, from my understanding of you, and I look forward to diving into this, is you have a healthy dose of both acceptance and you take action. And through these things, you've managed to live an active and athletic lifestyle. And it's going to be fun to talk with you about that. The first question I have for you is I understand that you are heat sensitive. How did you first discover that you're heat sensitive, and what did that feel like for you to discover that?
So my journey on being heat sensitive began at the end of my Tysabri treatment cycle. So I was on Tysabri for about 3 years. I had to change medication. And at the end of the washout period from Tysabri was 3 months. I had a minor relapse.
Okay. How long ago was this?
I think it's about 8 years ago.
So okay, when it right.
Happened 8 years ago. So I went many years without being at all sensitive to heat at all. And then again, the end of Tysabri washouts, I had a minor relapse, just made me sensitive to heat thereafter.
How did you discover? I mean, when you say you know you're heat sensitive, but what can you describe what that felt like or what it feels like for you to be heat sensitive? I mean, what changed from not being heat sensitive to being heat sensitive?
Right. So in my case, this minor relapse occurred during July. So it's fairly hot outside. And I began noticing almost straight away, as soon as this relapse, it wasn't an immediate change, but gradually I was losing my energy. Going outside, I could feel my energy just being drained. I tingle more. I just lose, you know, some ability to function a little bit because of the heat.
Okay.
That's what happened.
Sure. And that's, you know, many of us with MS experience that. And, you know, some don't, and it happens gradually. That's why I wanted you to experience, because some people might say, oh my gosh, that happens to me. What's so spectacular for me, and why I think you're such a rock star, is that this has happened to you and you said, okay, I don't like it, but here's some things I'm going to do about it. And you've done some pretty amazing things. So you use the winter months as what I'm calling your peak season months, and you have some other terms for that you can share with us. But tell me what your ideal temperature, outdoor temperature, is to train in. And I understand this is mostly running long distances.
Right. So my ideal temperature is in single digits Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit. So that's below freezing.
Way below freezing, yes. So
tell us what those kind of below freezing workouts look like for you.
So I'll get up, you know, I try and do it at sunrise on a really cold day in winter months. I'll go downstairs to the basement and try and stretch before I leave the house.
Okay.
Then I'll drive. I have a nearby park that has a 1.5 mile loop in it. And I run that loop enough times to meet my target distance. So I go there, I get out of the car. It's, you know, the immediate, it's very cold when you get out of the car, obviously. First of all, when I run in those situations, I'm running in shorts. That may surprise you.
Yeah, it does.
but I wear the multiple thin layers on top. I'll wear a balaclava hat to cover my ears and mouth. I'll wear gloves. The issue is I could wear pants to start out, but those take time to remove. But I'll overheat fairly quickly. So why I choose to wear shorts.
Okay.
Only be a few miles in, I'll start to begin to overheat. But if I wear shorts, then that isn't quite as present as otherwise.
Okay. And so what I heard you say is that you'll stretch and kind of get loose before you get out there. So it's not like you're have a kind of a traditional warm-up while you're out there. You'll do what you can do in a little bit warmer temperatures to stretch out your muscles, and then you go out. So that makes a lot of sense to me. Yeah. What sort of temperatures, outdoor temperatures, do you begin to feel some heat effect during your training?
Right. So I'll start running, and let's say it's a cold day. As the time wears on, it starts getting warmer naturally because the sun gets up and things start to warm up. But I've noticed the time gets to around 25 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah, I'll start to feel it more. I'll start slowing down. My pain start to tingle more, and I won't feel quite as normal as I would when it's really, really cold.
Sure, and you've also, your body temperature has also been increasing because of the exercise too. So your internal temperature is rising as well as the external temperature, and then those two things meet, but it's still below freezing.
Below freezing
when you feel the effects. And so when you begin to feel the effects of heat, what do you do? I mean, do you stop? Do you slow down? Do you change your pace up, or what happens then?
Right. So again, I'm wearing multiple layers on top. So I wear four layers on top. Mm-hmm. So I'll wear a hat and gloves. I will start to de-layer.
Okay.
Again, I do loops every 1.5 miles. I come around to my car again. And I'll start to delayer and leave that clothing next to the car.
Right, right.
At some point, I'll just remove the balaclava as well. Uh-huh. It's rare that I wear. It's really cold. I wear two pairs of gloves as well.
Sure.
So I'll remove the outer layer of glove. That's much thicker to leave a much thinner layer of glove. And then eventually, I may remove the gloves as well.
Makes sense. You know, I ride outside. I'm a cyclist and I ride outside in the cold temperatures as well. And there really is an art of layering. And still, for me, still being able to carry my layers with me. If I can ditch them, that's great. And sometimes I do. And I have behind a tree, and just got to remember it's there for on the return trip.
Right.
If it's raining or snowing outside, I can start off a trainer session in my garage, a stationary bike in the garage, and I'll have a down jacket and a knit cap on and gloves, and just the layers just keep coming off. So the art of layering is really helpful for people to understand, and you have to kind of find it for yourself. But and that way you can manage your temperature better. Yep. And you don't have to stick with what you started in.
Right.
So thank you for sharing that. It's for me, because I'm cold sensitive too, it's I liken it to Goldilocks. I have to stay just right. And so that brings me to the question for you is, do you experience any cold sensitivity? Like, do you get stiff with cold? Okay.
I do. If I'm stationary and it's cold, I will start feeling it after a few minutes. You stiffen up, your spasticity returns as you had back before. You start tingling. It's the opposite of the heat. It's cold,
Right.
So for me, it's both. But obviously, when you're running, you don't have to worry about the cold so much because your you're optimizing the temperature by running or while it's cold to make sure you don't get too cold, so where you get to be too stiff.
Okay. So you don't, so if I hear you correctly, by kind of maintaining your temperature with activity while you're in cold temperatures, yeah, you don't experience the spasticity or the stiff muscle kind of thing with.
Correct. Correct.
Okay. Okay.
Correct. If anything, after about 3 or 4 miles, it's really cold.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I feel at my best for the entire year during those miles. You know, all the stiffness, all the tingling, all the MS, surface issues have gone away temporarily.
Okay, that's great. So whatever you need to do to get there.
I feel free when that happens.
Oh, that's great. So, that's great. Yeah. It's kind of the sweet spot, but it takes a lot of application to be able to find that place for yourself. And, I just want to congratulate you for doing the work to find that. And, sometimes it can be short-lived and you enjoy it while you enjoy it. And like for me, when I'm out on the ride, I can experience some cold stuff that's not comfortable, some cold sensitivity where it's stiff, but also the muscle contractions are happening slower. So I'm just really struggling until I can, well, for me, other people around me don't know because I kind of keep it quiet and just kind of dial it into whatever I need to do. Yeah. But and that's the thing is we all need to find our own space of what it takes for us to remain active in the cold and in the heat. So good for you for finding yours. And it's kind of a moving target sometimes too.
It is. Yeah.
So you told us a little bit more about what you wear when you're running. And I'm glad you don't start out in running shorts and a tank top. You might end up there even in the cold temperatures.
I start in shorts.
Yes, you do. I know you shared that with us, and but not a tank top. You put the layers on the top that can peel off, which is great. Do you have any suggestions other than what we've talked about for our listeners around the art of layering? Any good products that you wear? You find that is easy, keeps you warm enough, and easy to take off.
Right. So there are in the hiking world, there's what's called base layers.
Mm-hmm.
Like companies like Patagonia will make base layers. And each layer is a different thickness. You have base layer level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4.
Right.
So I wear two level 2 base layers and then have a level 4 on top. So I'm wearing 3 layers. So each one is getting warmer each time. And because they're base layers, because they're thin, they help keep the heat trapped between you and your skin, the body. It's a good optimal place to be for me. Again, those base layers used for mountaineering and hiking is what I utilize.
Yeah, that's great. And there's the technology around gear is so great right now. And it's amazing for me, the smart wool I use now. I used to use polypropylene and all the other things. But the smart wool is super light and so warm. And it's easily you can easily layer with it and put it on, take it off, that kind of stuff. And for myself, where I have to carry it, it's easy to wad up and stick in one of my cycling jersey pockets.
Right.
So there is an art to gearing up and layering, and there are some great products out there that will help you with that. So Gary, I'm curious about your peak season training. Now you have a name for that. Do you remember what that is? Because I read an article, you called it your camel season or something like that.
Yes. It's my camel's hump.
Your camel's hump. So can you explain your peak training season as your why you consider it your camel's hump?
Camel's hump. So the theory is, not theory, this belief is that, camels store water in their hump, and they use the water, when they go out into the desert to, in the hump to keep themselves hydrated. So In reality, it's different than that, but that's just a popular belief is how it works. Mm-hmm. Why the camel has its hump. So I call my season, this goes from Thanksgiving to about February, depending on, or March, depending on the year. Call it it's my camel's hump season. Well, I am running, as much as I can, storing up all that conditioning, all that fitness in my camel's hump, my body, for use later in the year when I need to draw on that fitness to get through the summertime when it's really hot and I'm less active. Mm-hmm. So over the course of the year, I have a whole cycle. I'm very active in the wintertime, less in the summertime. I draw on my camel's hump from the winter to sustain me through the summer and maintain my level of fitness.
That's great. I love that you have a name for it. And when we can name things, we can have fun with it. And it's great because it's this larger understanding. And it's not like from understanding what your workouts and your year-round training looks like, it's not like you just train in the winter. That's not the case. Correct. It's your peak season. Like a lot of athletes have a peak season for different sports. And for you, this is your peak season of running and doing more endurance type things. So that's fantastic. I love that you have a name for it too. So can you tell us some of the competitions or the types of events that you do in these colder winter months?
Right. So the competition is mainly myself.
That's awesome. Can you tell us more about that?
So finding events on cold weekend days is a challenge, so because you can't predict the weather.
Right.
You may have, one year I had a whole series of events lined up, but they ended up being on warm weekends, so I couldn't do any of them. But if I go to my local park, I can choose a day when it's cold, get up early in the morning, even on a work day, get up early in the morning and go running then. And it's me against myself. Mm-hmm. The only people to compete with are people who are walking their dog. So that's how it works. I use the park as a place to go and go there when it's cold. Okay, it's going to be cold tomorrow morning here and on the East Coast in Annapolis. So I'll probably go tomorrow morning first thing at sunrise. I'll go to the park and run whatever distance I have in mind tomorrow morning. So it's not an organized event. But when I do events, I try and do half marathon events. That's my optimal distance. Marathon for me is too long.
Okay.
My spasticity kicks in at some point. I just can hardly move. But half marathon on a cold day is for me is optimal.
Okay, yeah. That's the sweet spot. Like finding a cold half marathon is right. Ideal. Yeah. Oh, that's great. So I understand you also are active year round, and one of your activities is indoor soccer.
Correct.
And can you share with us some of the strategies that you use to stay cool while playing inside?
Okay, so I go with a cooling vest. So for that the cooling vest, always has ice packs that are in the cooling vest itself.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're exercising wearing a cooling vest and there's ice around it, that ice starts to melt. So I have three sets of renewable ice packs with me during my I play for an hour.
Okay.
I have three sets of ice, and I replace the ice every 20 minutes is what I will do. And how to maintain the temperature of the cooling vest as cool as it can be during that one hour period. I will also, I play in a league that is people all my age. I'm 56 years old. We're all about the same age. We're not after a league competition anymore. We're way past that. And when we need to walk during the game, I'll walk. I'll just be very stationary. I'll just defend for a while and just limit my movement to help myself cool down. So, and all my teammates know why I'm doing that, and they're quite willing to support my walking around, not being as active for a few minutes while I try and recover. My breath, and secondly, to lower my temperature.
Mm-hmm.
I also have a neck ice pack. So it's like a flexible ice pack which you can buy from a drugstore. And I have three of those in my cooling chest, along with my cooling vest ice packs. And when I want a little bit more energy, I'll put one of those around my neck, and it gives me an extra boost.
Great.
So that's what I do. And so often, towards the end of a game, I'll sub out, put one of my neck braces on, and go back in again. And for the next 5 minutes, I have a little bit more energy to help complete the game. This is a way of managing the whole cycle of the game itself, is using the ice pack and then the neck cooling packs. It's really helped me.
Great. You know, I played soccer in college, and I played some indoor soccer as well. And it can get pretty hot in there, and it's a very fast moving game. And I'm sure you discovered your strategy through trial and error. Is that correct? Like, okay,
correct.
I'm going to have, it's not like, okay, I'm going to play indoor soccer and this is what I'm going to do. Can you tell us a little bit more about your learning curve around finding what works for you?
I began playing indoor soccer after a major relapse I had about 15 years ago now. And so at first you start doing it, you're not sure what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. You're not sure if you get too warm for you or not. But you just learn. You just learn to pace yourself for the whole game, and you learn how to keep, when to cool things down. You learn when to apply the ice packs to help yourself give yourself some more energy. It's a learning experience. It's iterative in nature.
Right. You're
finding out what your limits are, and then going to those limits, and then figuring out from there how do I take me off the limits for a few minutes to help my body recover before getting back to being more active again in the game itself.
Right. I call it kind of a reboot. Like what do I need to do to reboot my system?
Good way of putting it.
So tell us about how, you just showed us your determination about just kind of figuring it out as I go, saying, it takes a lot of courage to say, I don't know if this is going to work. I'm going to try to do this after a big exacerbation. I mean, a lot of people just say, well, I can't do that anymore. You're like, well, I don't know, but I'm going to give it a go. So what keeps you so determined and motivated to continue to meet the challenges of MS?
So I'm going to tell you a very personal story here. So when my wife and I, when I was diagnosed, my wife and I had not yet begun our family. Mm-hmm. We had no children. I was 30, she was 25. We both just started graduate school. We had no plans to start a family. It was 5 years or more beyond where we were at that point in time. But MS coming into our lives did change our mindset completely. And, about a year after I was diagnosed, our first child arrived. And on the morning of the first morning of her life, I made her a promise in my head that I'd walk into her high school graduation 18 years hence without any assistance, no walking cane, no wheelchair, no one helping me. And I was a year then post diagnosis. I knew enough by then to know that was a reach goal, that was a stretch goal to achieve. But having that goal is what kept me motivated.
Oh, that's great.
It was there that day I did that, my first day of self-injection. She was sitting next to me on that first day, or near me on that first day of doing it. Just seeing that little girl, a few months old, what made me push that needle the first time.
Mm.
That's what, it's a very deep emotional thing. It's a goal you want to achieve. And you remove heaven and earth to achieve that goal. I made her brother the same promise 2 years later. And that's what kept me going is that kind of trying to reach that goal. So that's what kept me going and determined to succeed.
Well, it's lovely how it was your children that you set these goals for. It wasn't the running, it wasn't an event, it wasn't the Pike Peak challenge that I know that you did. And it's like, these are things that I do in service to keeping my goal in mind to pull myself to my goal.
Right.
And by having these goals and intentions for ourselves, our activities help really pull us to them. And I know your children are adults now. And and you're surpassing your goal. So
right.
I'm curious to wrap up. I want to ask you this question. And is that what are you looking forward to in 2022?
So I'm going to run a half marathon in West Virginia in early January. It's at an event called the Frozen Sasquatch event.
Frozen Sasquatch.
So I tried doing it now a few times. I've registered for it a few times. Each year it's been too warm to do it.
Okay.
I'm running with a college friend of mine. We used to run in the cross country team together back in college days. But this year I'm determined to do it this year, no matter what. I want that t-shirt on it saying Frozen Sasquatch on the t-shirt to say that I did it. That's one of my goals for 2022.
That's going to be
in January.
Yeah. Well, you get to start it off with a bang. And I know I join many in wishing you a very, very cold day.
On a day, yeah.
For your success. Well, Gary, is there anything else you'd like to share with us? You were awfully inspiring and share so much wisdom in what it takes to have a goal and to really be successful by having a generous amount of acceptance of what is, but and also taking action to continue to live the life that you want for yourself. So is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners?
So I try and talk to people who've been just been diagnosed recently on a frequent basis. And I always give the advice, after my 26 years of living with this illness, I have three pieces of advice for them. Yeah, I call it my magic pill. Yeah, and that magic pill is three things. It's taking medication regularly without fail. Yeah, I was on a daily injection for many years, and I've on infusions since and pills since, but I've never missed a single injection, infusion, whatever is needed. Never. Second thing is I eat a very healthy diet. I don't go to fast food. I eat healthy, diet for the mainstream science perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
And the third thing is exercise regularly. I don't give it up. And those three things are what makes it meaningful for me to have an active life. But I tell folks so that you can do those three things doesn't guarantee success. This puts the bell curve in your favor.
Right.
But you need luck beyond that. But luck cannot work for you if you don't do those three things.
Right. Well, I'm a strong believer in making your own luck. And Gary, you are a glowing example of that. So thank you for sharing your three nuggets of wisdom in your life and your journey with us. You're a great inspiration. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. And for all your listeners, live life, enjoy it, and live your dream still.
Great. What great closing words. Well, that's going to be a wrap for this episode. Remember, episodes of the MS Fitness Challenge podcast are available to download on Apple, Google, Spotify, and Simplecast. A great way for you to support the MS Fitness Challenge is to share, rate, and review this podcast. The more people we can reach, the more impact we can have. And as we close out, remember to visit the msfitnesschallenge.com and check out all the great resources we have for you there. And be sure to get involved with our awesome MS Fitness Challenge Facebook group. For all those listening, to all the MS warriors out there, thank you for listening. Keep strong, keep believing, and together we can fight this battle against MS.